We need to remember that asking for help isn't about giving up, it's about not giving up.
Digital learning that's dramatically different. Welcome to this TED Learning Podcast.
Hello and welcome to TED Learning Podcast. I'm Darren and with me is Steve Carr from Mind Canyon. If you remember back in the 1980s, there would often be a film of some late night talk host and someone would call them up on the end of a bridge normally, and they'd be in a very dark place and about to jump off, and this guy would then talk them down and miraculously do it. And I don't know about you, but it felt like when you see something like that, that when you talk about someone who's in a dark place, potentially wanting to take their own life, it seems really far removed from our own existence. You think that no one could be like that, that we know. But that's not true, is it?
No, not at all. And yeah, nowadays it's more common than we think as well. So thoughts of suicide are very common. So one in 20 people in the United Kingdom at any one time will be having thoughts of suicide. It doesn't mean they'll act on the thoughts, but it just means that they're having thoughts. But it's a topic that's scary. There's something that we don't talk about. It's something that we're not educated in. And we believe it to be the problem of the professionals to deal with, as opposed to individuals at an individual level, being able to spot those signs of a person thinking about suicide and prevent it by having a conversation. But like you say, we see it, you know, in movies and things, and we see it so far removed. But we're seeing it more and more nowadays that people are being talked out of ending their life by suicide, or we're seeing it in the media a lot more. Still a lot of taboo around the subject, but it's more mainstream now. We've got things like social media, it's on news, television. We're seeing it an awful lot more.
So how common is it?
In the United Kingdom, it's estimated that 16 people per day end their life by suicide. And sadly, we see a lot of those are males. It's actually 75% males and 25% women. And that's due to things like the stigma attached to it. Men not being able to talk and tell people about their feelings or emotions, lack of education and training and knowledge around the subject. So men find it very difficult because it's still very much stigmatized. It's heavily stigmatized, suicide. So men find it very, very difficult to reach out for help in fear of things like their employment being terminated, their repercussions, children being taken away. But I think one of the most common myths around this is, and the reason why men don't ask for help, is because they still think it's illegal. That act of ending your life by suicide is illegal, when in fact it was decriminalised in 1961. Now, I have lived experience of this, and myself, I didn't reach out for help, just quite simply because I too thought it was illegal. So it's very common still in the United Kingdom for men, sadly, to end their life by suicide. 16 deaths per day in the United Kingdom.
So talk me then through, because this is the inspiration behind setting up Mind Canyon and your course on suicide first aid. Just talk me through that if you could.
Yeah, sure. Well, my own experience in the world of mental health came about 7 years ago, and I experienced a mental health breakdown whilst at work, and I couldn't tell anybody that it was mental health related. One, back just 7 years ago, we couldn't have a conversation about mental health, let alone train people in how to understand and see what some of the signs are in a person struggling with theirs. So for me, I didn't tell my employers, but the circumstances were not there. The conditions were not right. So I knew that I had to say it was something else. So we said it was performance related. So I was signed off work for a month with work-related stress. And on my return, a month later, I was invited into a meeting with my manager and his manager. And the outcome of that meeting was me being placed on something called a performance improvement plan. So for those that are unaware of that, it's a wonderful way for an organization to monitor your performance and to give you set KPIs and targets. Now, if you don't reach these KPIs and targets. They have a wonderful way of managing you out of the business.
I feel the word wonderful is being used with slight tongue in cheek here.
Yeah, absolutely. The reason why I say that is because that's exactly what happened to me. I didn't say wonderful at the time, and it really wasn't. If anything, it actually made my mental health worse. So that very month, it was October of 2015, after experiencing a mental health breakdown, I then, that very same month after my employment being terminated, I then tried to end my life by suicide multiple times. This then, on the final suicide attempt, I knew something had to change. And it was at that point that I visited my GP again, and I told them what was going on, and I asked for help.
And what did they say?
I was really surprised with the response that I received. We know that most people don't have a positive experience when they see their GP and ask for help, especially when it's something we can't see. So I was pleasantly surprised when my GP thanked me for going in. She thanked me and she listened. And that was the start which enabled me to then go on and get further help and to ask for help. But if it wasn't for those initial two words, thank you, I'm not sure I'd be doing what I'm doing today. It was her two words that changed the course of my career and life. And if we think those just two words could help somebody when they're struggling with their mental health, that's in a really bad place, turn their life around. Imagine what that could do if people were aware just to say thank you, to acknowledge that it's real for that other person. So this is how my business came about, on the back end of experiencing a poor mental health and a mental illness and a mental breakdown.
Because men can just brush it under the carpet, can't they? Mm. And you know, we kind of, you know, think about suicide as an extreme option. And it is an extreme option. And I would think that a lot of people would think, well, that's just extreme. It's not going to happen to anyone I know. Mm. But it can creep up on you, can't it? How can that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. There's many contributory factors. So it could be that biology could be a contributory factor, psychology, it could be past history, current life events, any of these can be a factor. So it could be somebody might identify as non-binary, transgender, and we know that they're heavily stigmatized. So that could be something that could be a contributory factor. And it could be that we're male. Again, that's another contributory factor of a specific age. So we know that suicide is a leading cause of death in young people and middle-aged men. So that's another contributory factor. It might be that somebody was looked after or has gone through the care system, or their parents are divorced when they're younger or experienced some kind of bereavement. All of these are contributory factors which lead up to that event. It's very rare that it happens just from one event. So, you know, whilst we might see that person is in crisis situation, they may be, you know, just about to end their own life, it doesn't happen on the spur of the moment, but it can happen with very little warning. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is that if, let's say, I was made redundant, that wouldn't just be the only factor that was in play that would lead me to take my life. So we think, if there's several unresolved issues, childhood trauma, addiction, any of these things that are unaddressed or unresolved, they could compound. And then that compound could lead up to that person just wanting to end their life by suicide. So we think the current financial status, and we've just come through COVID, those are both hugely traumatic for people. And those global traumatic crises, which is what they are, people tend to hold on to those, and we've just come through those. And what are we doing to help these people come through that? But it just seems currently like it's never ending. Yeah. So we can see how that amount of pressure compounding and leading up to the next event unresolved could lead a person to be in that much pain and suffering. And if they don't talk about that pain and suffering, it compounds to the extent where the pain outweighs the experience and they just want the pain to end.
Correct me if this is a really bad analogy, but it's a bit, it sounds to me like a bit like a pressure cooker, doesn't it? Where you haven't got the release valve.
Yeah.
And And it builds and it builds and it builds, and you know, obviously the pressure's got to go somewhere and something's got to happen. But you know, we talked earlier about stigma, and you know, there's all kinds of stigma, and you know, you touched on trans and that group of people. You know, I you may know the statistics better than I do, but they are much, much more likely to take their own lives than someone who identifies as straight heterosexual person. They've got a stigma in that, you know, they identify from a group that unfortunately they feel can get mistreated, or there's an issue that they haven't dealt with themselves, and there are other kinds of stigmas. I suppose, you know, if you're someone who is experiencing that, you know, what can you tell yourself to make yourself realize, you know, it's right to be thinking this way and to do something about it, not to brush it under the carpet mentally?
That's a really good question. And I think that's so tough for people to answer, including myself. It was, what can I do to change this situation? Sadly, most people only see the one option, which is, I want the pain to end. So something we say within the Suicide First Aid course is that most people thinking about suicide don't want to die. And this really hit me quite hard, because that was right in my experience of this, which is, I didn't want to die, but I wanted the pain to end. How is the question? How do we end this pain? And it was, for me, it was talking about it, but first of all, knowing who I could talk to, knowing that I could trust somebody, and knowing that I wouldn't be judged. And so this course is a wonderful course for educating people as to the power of listening and questioning. So for that person experiencing that level of pain, while suicide is an option for them, it's not the only option. So it's being able to talk about it, but people being able to spot those signs that the person is thinking about suicide is the key. Because when the people spot it, they can approach the person and say, I've noticed you haven't been yourself recently, or what has been the change in that person? And approach them and say, sometimes when people are going through this, they do think about suicide. Are you thinking about suicide?
What, just ask them straight out?
Ask them outright. Because let's give you an example of what happens if we don't. So if I was to ask you about suicide indirectly, maybe like this, you're not thinking of, are you what, you know, are you? What have I asked you there?
I suppose you asked me if I'm taking my own life, I guess.
But I didn't ask.
But you know, I didn't say it, no. So, yeah. I suppose, but as someone who's thinking that, you don't want to acknowledge that's what they're asking, do you? Because, yeah, that's where the pressure is, I guess.
But we must ask that question. Because if we don't ask that question, if we ask an indirect question, we're going to get an indirect response. So what we need to know from that person is, are they? Because even if they're not, we've asked that question, they know we care. We've said, are you thinking about suicide? And they know then that you're a safe person to speak to about something they've probably never spoken about before.
If you're a colleague, you know, there are two mind states here, aren't there, when you're in work. There's the mind state that we've got to get this stuff done. Someone over there is not pulling their weight. What the hell's going on? And you know, people do think that because we're in a very busy society and, you know, we're moving faster and faster and faster. And there'll be people who actually do manage to sit down and just stop and identify and go, something's not quite right here. I'm not saying that people who are really busy are not uncaring, but I think, you know, from my perspective, that you know, from what I've observed, those are the kind of the mind states. And it's just, I suppose, when you're in one of those mind states, you know, what can you observe in the other person, and then how can you reach out to them? You know, what are the signs to look out for, and how can you then reach out to them to help?
Yeah, sure. And yeah, I get that with workplaces, that we're all a bit too busy and we've got to get this piece of work done and we've got tight deadlines. Culture change, huge. Needs to be a culture change within organisations of inclusivity. And if that person isn't performing, that Steve in the business isn't performing, instead of placing them on a performance improvement plan, we need to bring the human element back of saying, I've noticed you haven't been yourself recently. Let's have a chat about that. But it needs to be from the top down, because if, again, the conditions and circumstances aren't correct and people are pointing the finger and going, oh, they're not pulling their weight, what's the likelihood of that person talking about it being a mental health related issue? So what we need to be aware of is what has changed within that person that you're concerned about. So we've all got little alarm bells that ring when something isn't right. And intuitively, we know when something isn't right about a person. So that's when we need to say, actually, hang on a minute. What is it that I'm witnessing here? What's that behavior change? What is it? And if we are aware of this, if we have the understanding, education, training within spotting these signs, then we'll find it a lot easier to ask as opposed to brush it under the carpet. Because this is where people are struggling and suffering. Not having this education and training, it's forcing issues like presenteeism within organisations, which is, in its simplest form, people coming into work, being present but not productive. So it's costing the UK economy up to £74 billion, every organisation, £1,300 per employee per year for poor mental health. And the cost of training on the return on investment is 5 to 1 on this training. So you think the average cost of a training, a few thousand pounds, will outweigh the cost of presenteeism to the organisation and to the individual and the economy.
And that's a really good point that takes us to you know, the impact on staff and the impact on presenteeism. So if you're a manager and, you know, you're managing a bunch of people, and you talk about culture change, you know, what can a manager look out for? And, you know, if you've got someone in the room, and we talked about your experience where, you know, someone sat you in the room and they've taken down a performance issue, so, and we're trained to do that, aren't we, as managers, what should they be asking instead to keep those questions open to make sure they don't close the path to someone who's perhaps experiencing suicidal thoughts?
Yeah, we need to be asking the person how they're feeling. So we need to be doing check-ins with the people as opposed to check-ups. We know the world has changed, the way working world has changed, and more people now are doing work from home. And sadly, most have just been left to it. So they're struggling, but not being able to tell their employers because their employers aren't sure of what to look for because they can't see them. But they're still getting the work done. So what I've been finding recently is that a lot more employees have been working harder, but they've been splitting the work just to get the outcomes done. And employers are not always in contact with them. So what I always say to employers is, we need to ask a better question from the employees to find out how they are. So what we're coming away from is asking, how are you? The question, how are you? Because I'm likely to get a response of,
yeah, all right,
I'm fine. So what I said to the employers is, the way that you can do this very easily, and if you want to see that top-down change, is ask employers, how are you feeling? Or employees, sorry, how are you feeling? And the reason why you're doing that is because we're feeling our way through this current pandemic or we've just gone through and this financial crisis. People are feeling different. But the thing with mental health is it changes a lot over the period of a day, even. It could change over a week. So what I like to say is, whenever I'm speaking to my team or anybody that I'm delivering training for, is, how are you feeling at the moment? Have you been feeling in the last week? How are you feeling today? So this will tell me or give me some indication of where they are. I also say our mental health is like on a scale of 1 to 10. So 1 being bad, 10 being perfect, exemplary. And I say my mental health form score today is at an 8. That means things are going well. Nothing's impacting my mental health. But if it was a 1 or 2, I would explain why and why it's there and what my 1 or 2 means to me. Because that's the easiest way we can understand where this person is on that 1 to 10. Yeah. So it's, where's your mental health form score today? 8 or 9. How are you feeling at the moment? What this will do for employers is then be able to go on to the next question of, is, I understand you're at a 1 or 2. What does that mean for you? What do I need to do to help you today? And bearing in mind, with mental health, it doesn't mean poor mental health or mental illness. It just means it's been impacted today by something. It could be the boss has actually emailed to say, giving you another deadline, here's an extra piece of work.
That never happens.
Yeah. So it could be it's just been impacted by something, but that person just needs a little bit of a break today. Tomorrow, it could all change.
So there is help out there, and you know there are suicide first aid trainers, but there's not many of them at the moment, are there?
No, there's only just over 400 in the country. So I feel honoured to be one of them, but also I'm a trainer for the National Centre of Suicide Prevention. So delivering training for them. But it's like mental health first aid. It's scary when it first came out, but slowly people are trickling in because they want to know more about this. And I would encourage anybody that has done the mental health first aid training to go on then to do the suicide first aid, because what the mental health course doesn't do that the suicide first aid course does is helps people and coaches them through the conversation. So not only do we do the principles of suicide first aid, which is teaching people what to look for, we coach them through the entire conversation. So we give them the skills and the confidence and the knowledge that they've tried it and experienced it before going out into the big wide world and asking the question, are you thinking about suicide?
I know when we had our kind of pre-interview chat that, you know, obviously we talk about suicide, it's very serious, but I know, you know, one thing you feel passionate about is to say, look, there is hope out there.
Yeah, there is hope and there's help. We've got some wonderful services, and I know people think that the services are overstretched, but there's so many more now. So we've got the Hub of Hope, which is a national database for mental health services. If you type in your postcode into the Hub of Hope, it'll bring up any mental health service within a 25-mile radius of your geographical location. We've got things like the Hub of Hope, the Doc Ready. Doc Ready helps you get ready for the first time you speak about your mental health. And then we've got Shout 85258 and Samaritans 116 123. There's always somebody ready to listen. That person has just got to take that first step. We need to remember that asking for help isn't about giving up, it's about not giving up.
Brilliant. Thank you ever so much, Stephen. It's been lovely talking to you today. And you can listen to all our podcasts. Just search for the TED Learning Podcast for more podcasts like this. Or you can go via our website at tedlearning.co.uk.